Welcome to Money Gurus. I'm Matt Jodoff. We're looking for voices who bring practical insights, real case studies, and actionable strategies that help our viewers strengthen profitability, improve financial systems, and lead their business with confidence. We want to hear your story and help share it with a national audience. This is Money Gurus on Now Media Television.
Welcome to Money Gurus, where I break down the real mechanics of business growth, profitability, and performance in today's fast-moving economy. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Deepak Bhutra, a global business leader with more than 30 years of experience driving growth, strategy, and transformation across multinational organizations. He has led cross-border teams, managed major portfolios, coached leaders at every level, and now helps professionals and organizations build sustainable performance through Rise Up Career Studio. This is the perfect conversation for anyone who wants to understand how real performance is built under pressure and how to scale without breaking the people or the business. I'll open up by reframing performance. I do not want this to be a segment that sounds like a hustle culture. I want it to land on the difference between pushing for numbers and building a business that can keep producing at a high level over time. Deepak, when you look at a business that performs consistently at a high level, what stands out first?
Harish, thanks for having me here. Harish, million-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, if we could figure that out, then we could wipe out all the consultants on the planet. But to give your question a very simple answer, for me, it's clarity and consistency of behavior. Those are the two things I always look for. A lot of people think that results is what makes people, you know, look at a business performing at a consistent level. That's an output, right? Numbers are always an output. For me, it's about repeatable rhythms. I always go into any meetings, and I come from a sales background. So for me, Harsh, looking at how salespeople are talking in a room, what is happening, is there a true pipeline, has always been better metrics than looking at the numbers made at the end of a quarter, right? So that's how I would answer it for you. Repeatable rhythms that people know what to do with. They know what matters. They know how decisions are made, and they know what success looks like. I look for those behaviors first. Outcomes will always happen if the right behaviors are upfront.
That makes a lot of sense, Deepak. And, you know, at that level, are you seeing something that's more structural in the business, or is it more about leadership?
This is one of those questions which I always say I like to plead the fifth on, right, Harsh? This is a question that, here's the reality. Leadership starts the engine, gets things going. Structure and discipline maintain the engine and it's running. That's the only distinction I would propose to you at this point, because one is necessary to get, you know, you need launch power, right? You need that, what we call critical velocity or critical something. And that comes from leadership and sustainability as well. But there's also the middle part. Leadership can't scale everywhere, right? You need to know that your team knows what it needs to do. So that's where structure and discipline come in. So there's a balance to both. And the reality is that we put a lot of emphasis on leadership. We actually don't put a lot of emphasis on followership. And to me, followership is a big subject that we need to focus on as well. Why do followers allow someone to be called a leader, right? But that's a digression. Back to yours.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Deepak, just from your perspective, you know, do you see this is more in certain industries, or is it sort of a universal leadership issue that you see?
I want to be very careful how I say this here, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's not that we are choosing different types of humans for different industries, right? At the end of the day, you got a pool of people. Yes, you are correct. People in certain industries will have a certain outlook, right? High tech, founders, startups, they have a different vibe to it, correct? So that culture is set at the top. But I would be very loath to say, I'd be very careful to say, because I've actually seen egregious behavior in every domain, right? You see unethical behavior in every domain. But I would simply state that there are certain domains that do encourage ethical behavior, because that is just the way those organizations are run. And I want to be very careful here. I know you and I'm on Money Gurus right now, right? And on Money Gurus, I'm not going to talk about not-for-profits or NGOs, right? We're going to talk about money-making. So in most money-making, I would argue that it's not the domain that decides what is going to be your leadership failure or your leadership weakness. It's going to be the individual and the culture of the organization. And that can happen to anyone. It's a random dart. Think of it as a chimpanzee sitting and shooting some darts in the air. Some hit jackpot, some will hit the wall, some will actually hit the chimp's owner's head. So I leave it at that.
I like it. And I'm just curious, you know, because I saw your background, very, very impressive. I'm curious, like, what have you seen? Have you seen, like, experienced leaders make, like, egregious mistakes, like you mentioned earlier? Or do you tend to see that they tend to be on par?
Let's just break down the word leader that you used there for a second, right? Leadership to me is something that's earned over time. In a hierarchy, you're typically a manager, director, VP, or something like that, right? Now, you've used the phrase word leadership. Let's just break it down. I can tell you thousands of reasons why managers fail, right? Let's talk about why leaders fail. Leaders will typically fail, and this is the biggest thing that I've seen. And Harsh, I'd love to get your opinion on this one. Harsh, leaders fail when they actually get into a tough situation that they never experienced before. The reality is that tough experiences is when you really realize or not. That's when people typically lose their head, lose their mind. And when you lose your head, lose your mind, the first people that you're going to attack or demonstrate your weakness or that moment of humanity, as I call it, right? We're all human, right? We make mistakes. Is going to be your team. And your team is going to be surprised to see behavior from you and something from you which is not in what they know about you, right? It's out of style. It's something that's just happened. It's like an outlier, but it happened. Now, the problem is that if you are under sustained stress and sustained continuity with that crisis that you're facing, your behavior is going to deteriorate until you keep bringing it back to the center. And that requires a lot of focus by leadership. And I think that's where leadership typically fails. Managers, on the other hand, fail all the time. They will fail on a quarter's results. They will fail on a yearly result. Their mood swings are, you know, all over the place. And also hiring patterns, right? Leaders tend to hire better. Leaders tend to also have a better magnanimous feeling of how to hire. If he's an A grader, he's never going to hire a B grader. He's going to hire an A grader as well. And maybe an A plus so that the entire organization falls there, Harsh, because that was a $1 million question and you kind of got me there for a second.
I think, you know, and, you know, I know Deepak, from your perspective, I know you do a lot with sales. Do you find like sales leadership different from other forms of leadership in the company?
Wow, that's, my gosh, Harsh, you're going to lead me to alcohol and drink in public. Yes, brilliant question. Here's the fundamental disjoint, right? Most leaders, and I think every leader, let's think about leaders as being high in the hierarchy, right? It's a numbers game. They have to give a signal to the market and the market has to respond. The market is watching them eagle-eyed. They're looking for them to trip up, right? The difference is that sales leadership is also, I would say, more mentally resilient. They are used to no's. They're used to. The problem, though, is that how they coach their people are dramatically different. When you are in a consistent environment, sales leadership, that is, where you're measured by every cent and every outcome, even if your behavior is that of a saint, but you're not making a number, you are going to be out. That's just how sales is. And because of that behavior, you have another problem in sales leadership, which is sales leadership is what I call behavior attitude technique. And unfortunately, technique is where people focus on a lot. I mean, if you think about it, Harsh, it's more easy to tell me, you didn't make your 30 cold calls today. I can see a problem coming. But it's, you didn't make your 30 cold calls today. How can I help? That's such a simple word to add to it, right? Because in sales language, in sales leadership, we typically are paying a salesperson higher quantum compared to what he would have made if he was doing a different job outside of sales, right? You're looking at nearly 100 to 200% level differences. When you're at that type of scrutiny, every move you make tends to be harsher, the punishment that is harsher than what you would face. Therefore, sales leadership behaves and acts in a different way because they carry far more risk versus reward. A reward on paper, yes, but that's also a huge price you pay to reach that reward on paper. I hope that helped.
It really does. And, you know, like for me, when I look at sales folks, I know that their performance is more measurable, right? You can see how much sales they've made, how much their organization has grown. You have like real metrics you can measure against. But I like what you're saying because I think it goes a lot more than just the numbers itself. It's really about the attitude, about the culture, the tone at the top. There's a lot of different pieces to it. And that kind of leads me to my next question about, you know, now we have so many companies that are global and the cultures are different in each one of these different geographies. Is there any thoughts you have in terms of leadership and maybe how you should manage performance when you're looking at across geography for the most part?
So I'm one of those guys that has led teams across regions, right? And I'm going to give you an answer that you're not going to like, Harsh. I think the onus is not on the geography to change its culture. Its onus is on the leader to adapt his style. For me, as a leader, I had team members reporting to me in the Middle East. I had team members reporting to me in Australia. I had team members reporting to me in China. You actually need to put in an effort to actually understand what works, what doesn't work. There's a certain linguistic style that works very well with Aussies, but fails miserably with Singaporeans, right? And I think this is what I would tell people as a caution. Leadership fails because you did not adapt to not just the moment, but to the requirements of the team. And I always tell people, when you're in doubt, go down to the least common denominator. Use language which is simple. Use behavior that you know is going to be, let's say, non-jarring. It will not raise anyone to raise an eyebrow, correct? Mind your language. Be patient. Show extreme patience. Many cultures, language barriers there. I speak fluent English, and I can assure you, you can know the best English in life, but if you're sitting in front of someone who is, for him, English is the third language, you need to dial it down. They will not rise to the occasion. You need to stoop to the occasion. That's how I would answer your question. There is a huge difference, yes, of course. But I want to be very careful here. Leadership is leadership from a hierarchical point of view. But to command the cultural obedience to that is just not going to happen. And I've been stunned. And particularly, I'll tell you the leaders that stunned me the most is typically Americans. The Europeans are still more flexible because they come from a multilingual society. So they know the value of that, right? And they can respect it. But typically notice they walk into a room and they'll use language which just does not translate. Let's talk eyeball to eyeball. And you're sitting there trying to understand what is eyeball to eyeball even mean. Yes, today we live in an age where you assume that people know all this lingua, right? And people and watch Bollywood movies. But I just make it. And leadership needs you, the leader, to be more accommodating than expecting other cultures to accommodate to you. And that's just my advice.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. And that distinction matters, actually, because as a business can look productive from the outside, but while quietly it's draining its people, its margin, its momentum, if results can only hold while everyone else is overextending, the system is already fragile. So when I come back, I want to dig into what leadership really looks like when a company is moving through disruption, restructuring, and a major change.
We'll be right back with more financial insights, strategy, and tools to help build a more profitable business. This is Money Gurus on Now Media Television. And we're back with more financial insights, strategy, and tools to help build a more profitable business. This is Money Gurus on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Money Gurus. Stay tuned to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku, on iOS, and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast version on www.nowmedia.tv. Now, welcome back to Money Gurus. I'm here with Dr. Deepak Bhutra, and we're talking about what it takes to lead real performance when the business environment gets complicated, uncertain, and or demanding. I'll move this segment into transformation and change management. I want this part to feel highly practical because every business leader eventually faces some version of disruption. Market shifts, internal restructuring, talent instability, or growth that outpaces the organization. What do most effective leaders do first when the business enters a period of major change?
Change, change, change. So, Harsh, the way I'm going to answer that is I'm going to take you back into time. Sun Microsystems is where I was. We were acquired by Oracle, and you cannot get a bigger change than a merger, correct? Someone's acquiring you. You can expect people to be running around like headless chicken. Rule number one for most leaders is that people actually are not scared of change. And I just want to say this very clearly. People are scared of uncertainty. And a leader's job, Harsh, is actually to make sure that they create clarity. And that clarity needs to happen before you push for any action. You can't just run into a room and say, we have been acquired, so therefore, no, slow down. Explain the rationale for the acquisition. Explain what is expected of people. Explain what's going to happen. Do not rush into execution. Ask people, what do they need to know? I always tell them, just remember these three words, pause and define. That's it, Harsh.
Wonderful.
What's changing? Tell the world. What's not changing? Tell them that also, Harsh. Sometimes people love comfort. You know, you walk home and the wife says, I've cooked this, and you sit there like, oh, cool. I heard three things that are constant. There's maybe two new stuff. Okay, it's not as bad as I think it is. And you'll be surprised how much peace your team will get when they know that not everything is changing. And just balance that. And then move into a very simple trick that I can teach leaders. Tell them what success would look like over the next 2 weeks, over the next 1 month, over the next 6 months. This gets the team to stop crying about today and focus on tomorrow. That's, Hirsch, the little guidance that I would give to your listeners on this call.
That is wonderful. And then I know, Deepak, you've led large transformations. And what's that like the very first conversation you're having? And when you're talking, just like you talked about, there is uncertainty. There's a little bit of mistrust maybe with management at this time. Like, what is that first conversation you're having with them to really set the stage?
I think it's vulnerability. Hirsch, I cannot tell you. You know, most leaders walk into a room and they keep the jacket and tie on. Damn it, please don't do that. And I'm not saying physically take your tie or your jacket off. Stop acting like a leader. Start acting like a human. Because what's happening in that room is that there's turmoil. People are confused about their job. And the number two point I want to make is please always call the elephant out in the room. You'd be surprised, Hirsch, how many leaders walk into a room in a merger and acquisition or a major transformation effort, and they actually fail to do some of the basic stuff that just makes you wonder. And vulnerability doesn't mean that you're going to tell the world about your deepest, darkest secret. It simply means that I acknowledge we're all in a changing world. I am in the same boat that you're in. I just have more information than you do. And my job is to cascade that information to you in a structured way. And that to me is, Hirsch, how I would answer your question, sir. I've always said transformation efforts will always fail, Hirsch, on behavior, gap in communication. You don't communicate enough. And of course, there's some people who tell me, then does that even mean we should communicate all the time? I'm like, yes, as long as it's meaningful. If you're going to repeat the same stuff again and again and again, which sometimes is valuable, but then you got to ask yourself, are you adding any value or just pulling people into rooms? And I think that's where leadership needs to figure it out. Every word uttered by leadership, people are listening in that room because they look upon you, right? Followership gave you the title of a leader. So you owe it to your followers to retain that followership that's been given to you. And I think this is very critical. So a lot of leaders forget that. They really don't understand. They think that leadership means that they are the big kahuna. No, sir. Leadership means that certain people decided and said that they would follow you to wherever you took them. They put faith in you. You earned their faith. You need to now sustain that faith.
Makes a lot of sense there. In terms of like when you look at transformation, right? I keep hearing about the many, many failures that happen with transformation. It seems like the company has the strategy right. What are you seeing as the reasons for that? Why is there such a disconnect between strategy and transformation?
Because we are human, Hirsch, we are human. The problem with strategy is that strategy is cooked up by a couple of people I call it strategy a vain attempt for survival. I'm sorry, I'm not a big believer in strategy. You know, drawing up ideas on a piece of paper is amazing. Executing it requires extreme patience, requires extreme, rigor. You know, my mom used to say this to me, you know, having a child is like, it's really funny. People celebrate the fact that my wife's pregnant. And she says, that's not the ultimate test, right? Animals can make anyone pregnant. The point is what happens in how you raise that child, how that child comes into the world and gets your love and your nourishment, right? So I've always said to people, you do the strategy, it's on a piece of paper. What's not going to change is behavior. Strategy execution at the end of the day cannot be done by leadership. This is where you take strategy and you break it down into bite-sized pieces so that your linkage from the top's vision of where you are down to the bottom needs to be more granular. And there's a little secret I'll give everyone, and everyone was born knowing this. What's in it for me is what's top of their mind. Resolve that. You can do a lot of stuff, right? But you need to resolve the fact that people will have certain habits that they will still do. People have still certain mindsets that they're going to execute on. And honestly, the way that people operate day to day is better known by the people, not by the leaders. So the leaders actually need to stand up and say, I'm telling you something. How will this impact you on an operational basis day to day? Listen and then check that. Because if you don't check that, I guarantee that execution will break because your behavior never caught up with the strategy. Hirsch, simple, plain and simple.
So Deepak, that's really good advice. And it sounds like it's more of a leadership issue versus maybe an execution gap or maybe a people alignment problem. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that, and I'll tell you why. Because here's the reality, right? We are so fascinated by the million-dollar earning CEO that we actually forget. The million-dollar CEO's job is actually not to run the company. His job is actually to motivate the company. And those guys are the ones, at the end of the day, he can't be in front of a machine operating it, right? He cannot be the guy that goes to fix the water cooler when it breaks. He just cannot be everywhere, correct? But his aura is everywhere. And I think that's the reason I explain to people, do not confuse aura for competency. There are two different things. Your aura will get people to fight for you. Your aura will get people, and, you know, soldiers die for the nation, correct, Harsh? I'm not suggesting that people should die for the leader, but the leader needs to know his place in that place. I don't think any leader is going to stand up and say that I'm going to fix the water cooler. He will, however, approve the budget to get the water cooler approved fast and quick because he knows the value of that. And that's all I'm trying to say there. For me, leadership needs to know that they are being watched. Every action, every activity of theirs gives people energy. And every inactivity also takes energy away. And I think that's the balance I'm asking for.
When it comes to balance, you know, like, you know, how can a company actually act quickly without creating confusion, fear, and internal chaos?
Oh, first, tell people what you're going to do and then do it. Simple. Reinforce the priorities that you have in mind constantly. Make every decision you take about what's going to happen inside the company extremely transparent. And that's the element I spoke about earlier, right? When I asked for vulnerability, vulnerability also means more transparency. And then the last thing that I want to repeat, most leadership fails because they don't remain consistent. When things get heated, they get heated. And when you as a leader get heated, you're bound to say things, do things that are going to go completely against the grain of any leadership qualification. Just think about it, right? I'm very sure, Harsh, you've seen a leader, excellent guy, smart, articulate. But in a moment of weakness and in a moment of anger, he says something that now scars you. And I've always said this to leaders, and I made this mistake, Harsh. I make this mistake constantly. In fact, this afternoon, I have a call with my team, and that conversation is not a cool one because I've seen certain team members not delivering on what they themselves committed to deliver to me. So I want to put this on the table right now. Great leadership is not about soft leadership. Great leadership is about remaining accountable, but keeping your language precise. And play the person, right? No, sorry, play the ball, not the person. That's how I would put it.
I really appreciate what you said about transparency. I mean, that is so key. I mean, what do you feel like, you know, leaders can do better to, you know, be transparent, especially in a difficult crisis type of situation? Is it a kind of a balancing act where they can't release too much information, but at the same time, you know, they probably want to keep their employees aware of the situation? What do you feel about transparency?
Transparency is what you make of it. I loved a manager that walked in and said as follows, guys, I have tons of updates. I'm going to share with you only those updates that I'm allowed to share with you because you understand this is a very sensitive time. If I cannot share or if there's something on your mind that I've not covered in my agenda today, please raise it and I'll see what I can do for you. There you go. Right up front by stating that, you tell the whole world that not only are you constrained, I'm also constrained. There is ultimately a company, right? Like I joked with you, Harsh, right? We all bleed blood, right? It's one of those things. Here's what I would recommend that companies or leaders look at very carefully. When you're communicating, right? This is typically where things go pear-shaped for these people. They tend to overcomplicate the message. They avoid difficult truths. And I think this is the single biggest downfall. Please don't avoid a difficult conversation. And you know, Harsh, when you avoid difficult conversations, this is where you have a performance review. You think the guy that did the job has done it very badly, but he leaves the room kicking his heels and screaming in joy because he thinks he just got a great rating from you because you never had that difficult conversation. You never gave him the truth. And then one last thing I'll tell you, leadership is an odd word. It gives people the illusion of one man or one woman standing on the summit. That's not true. Leadership is a group of people, right? Not everyone reports to the CEO. Most people report to a middle manager or senior manager somewhere in the context. And the biggest trick that I can tell people is that align your messaging. Inconsistent messaging or messaging which is laced with a manager's own interpretation is going to be cross-checked by people at the water coolers. And here's something that leaders don't realize. You lose the sanctity of a process when your utterances are being cross-checked with utterances of others. And when people find a gap, your entire message becomes suspect. And I'm shocked to tell you, Harsh, that leaders just don't get these fundamentals. I would always tell people, if you're going out and going to send a message to the world, please coordinate with the rest of the leadership to make sure that everyone sings from the same hymn sheet. And it's not an email you send to everyone. You can try that, but it's also about having a quick conversation that says, this is the intent. This is how I intend to say it. Do you guys see anything? And please make sure that you align with this messaging as well.
Makes sense. Absolutely. I appreciate the share, Deepak. That's wonderful. And I think that is where leadership becomes really, really real. because change exposes everything. The clarity of the strategy, the trust inside the team, and the strength of, you know, the operating rhythm. If those pieces are weak, the business feels like it really is not working. Next, I want to go into accountability side of this, because a strong performance also depends on commercial discipline.
We'll be right back with more financial insights, strategy, and tools to help build a more profitable business. This is Money Gurus on Now Media Television. And we're back with more financial insights, strategy, and tools to help build a more profitable business. This is Money Gurus on Now Media Television.
I'm back with Dr. Deepa Boothra on Money Gurus, and this part of the conversation gets right into the heart of execution. Growth is exciting, but without discipline, accountability, and clear performance standards, the business starts paying for that weakness in ways leaders often ignore for too long. I'll use this segment to connect leadership choices to business outcomes. I want the audience to feel that commercial discipline is not cold. It's essential. This is where people in leadership, financial performance stop being conversations. Deepak, when you say leadership needs commercial discipline, what does that look like in an everyday business decision?
It's simple, Harsh. I mean, it sounds like a complicated question, but it's actually, if you cut to the core, make decisions that reflect both clarity of thought and accountability of outcomes. That's it. There's nothing more than that. And the way that a leader needs to make sure that it shows up in his conversations is that, one, he sets clear expectations. One of the biggest challenges we have in communication skills with humanity is that we think we can read people's minds. We look at body language and think that they have understood what we are saying or asking for. One of the tricks I can tell a leader listening in right now is that always ask people to reconfirm their understanding of what you've just said and what they think the deadline or the outcome, deliverable is. It's a little trick that actually helps solve a lot of problems. Second three is, when you follow through, you need to follow through consistently. This is again back to human nature. Human beings we get going very quick, Harsh, we get excited and then we lose that speed. You need to, and follow up is one way to ensure that. And we learn this from sales all the time, right? And then the reality also is that leaders need to make decisions not based on their comfort, but based on value, based on accountability and discipline. And I just want to make this message very clear. I'm not saying that I need you to be mercenaries, but I need leadership to be very supportive in how they are implementing commercial discipline. And clarity is important, because if you don't do clarity up front, you're going to create a lot of confusion. And commercial discipline, as you know, and Harsh, you know that numbers always reflect discipline in some form or fashion, right? Either you spent more than you earn, or your inventory went to, you know, nonsense, or you paid more than you should have paid to someone, stuff like that. So at the end of the day, if you're going to be talking about commercial discipline, whatever activities you do, if you look at it as a businessman, clarity is the number one thing, because avoiding confusion means you're avoiding defects. You're avoiding paying people to be productive, but they're now reworking the work that you asked them to do.
Wonderful. And Deepak, you know, do you see leaders drift away from commercial discipline without even really realizing it?
Yes, all the time. And the reality there is that it requires leadership to think slightly differently, right? And if you are doing it, then this is what I would tell people to do. Focus on a few very key things, right? And those key things need to be, you know, remember the DuPont chart or whatever they used to call it, right? If you do X activity over here, this is how it impacts revenue. If you do X equity over here, this is how it impacts cash flow. And I think this is where a stupendously smart leader is going to figure out that his actions, his words are going to have this lever on that person's mind. And that's how you then make sure results get driven at the top also.
I like it. So you're talking about accountability, right? You're talking about accountability, talking about how it affects revenue, profitability, execution. I mean, like, where do you see it first? Do you see it as like missed targets, maybe slower execution, or is it something less obvious?
I'll tell you where. It's so easy. Hirsch, you're going to fall over laughing that I didn't need to bring in this man to talk about this. This is a common sense. Performance leakage happens when you start seeing very simple things, like people are unable to articulate back to you what you just said to them. Simple test. Number two, people start missing deadlines. Number three, inconsistent quality, Harsh. You're going to start seeing the very same person that used to give impeccable work now making basic mistakes. And then you're going to be sitting in a meeting, and Harsh, you're going to fall over laughing when I tell you this. If two people tell you the same coin but give you two sides to it, that shows that there's lack of ownership, which means that you have asked people to do things that they're not clear on. And ambiguity or an amorphous delegation is always a big problem, when, especially when you are trying to ascertain on accountability, right? And over time, I guarantee you, missing deadlines, inconsistent quality, unclear ownership will impact revenue, will absolutely destroy cost. But more importantly, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to destroy the trust in the system. And in my opinion, trust, when it starts compounding, your overall losses are going to start compounding.
It's interesting, you know, you talked about those attributes and they sound simple on the surface, but so many people fail to execute on that. So I 100% agree. I like the simplicity in that.
Isn't that true? You know, we got religious books in our homes for thousands of years old, right? But we still have a crisis with humanity, right? Our prisons are overflowing. So that just goes to show we have the common sense to know what to do, but the application of that common sense is fairly uncommon, just to play on some words there with you.
I like it. And it's interesting that kind of leads into my next question, because some leaders delay, you know, in having those hard conversations, right, about performance-based decisions and things like that. What would you say about that? I mean, what kind of words of wisdom can you provide?
And this is, my boss told this to me to my face, and he said to me, your problem is, Deepak, that you're confusing being liked with being effective. You're confusing being social with being, you know, accountable, holding people accountable. And that's the problem. And this is the reality. A lot of leaders will fall into the trap of avoiding discomfort because it feels very easy in that moment, right, Harsh? But what's going to happen is that it's going to leave slippage to later. Look, I'll be honest when I admit this to you, Harsh, and to your audience. I am a leader, but at the same time, I'm also a man with a heart. The problem that occurs, though, is that at points when I really need to leash people in, I feel bad about it. And I still do. So I temper my words. And when you temper your words, that's sometimes not good, because tempering your tone is more important than tempering words. It's actually tone that causes the most damage, right? So when you're having a hard conversation and stuff like that, that's how I would just tell people, you know, think about it. Is it about being liked, or is it being about effective? Is it about accountability? And understand one thing. When people try to avoid a conversation, they think they're being neutral. Oh, no. There's no such thing as neutrality when it comes to accountability. There is a cost, and it's not even a hidden cost. It's going to hit you between the eyes ASAP. And when people tell me, what does that cost look like? My answer is very simple. Just take the person you're working with, take their salary, multiply by 12. And even if you take a fraction of that, you'll suddenly see the size of the problem. Right there, small number, but it starts magnifying pretty fast.
Interesting. And, you know, just, I'm just interested in your coaching work. You know, what's usually driving that hesitation?
Oh, it's head trash. It's just how you've been raised. It is some of the values that you carry. And here's something that I'm going to tell you, your audience, that's going to be very simple. You know, personal brand. A lot of people are asked, what's your personal brand? And they will tell you, I'm a people's person. I am a team builder. I am a man of my word. I am a man of integrity. There's nothing wrong with any of those. The problem with those is that they all sound very touchy-feely, right? And when your value system is based on touchy-feely stuff, then of course you're going to have a problem with an uncomfortable conversation. Now let's flip the coin there. Someone says, my value system is as follows. I deliver what I said I will do. I'm always accountable and I'm deadline driven. Now you can immediately see with value system like that, that person most likely is going to have a very different conversation. So leaders that have a value system which is a bit touchy-feely soft, and there's nothing wrong with that, because Harsh, so that's how I would say, to bring balance into the ecosystem, try to figure out what persona do you want to be known by. Look for those gaps in that persona by putting down certain, you know, labels to it, understanding those labels, and then say, this label might get me into trouble. So as an example, I am known to be a soft guy. Why? Because at hard moments, I break bad news very gently. And sometimes if someone has got something hanging from their nose, just call it out instead of like making funny gestures or like... Just get to the point.
I like it. And, you know, it's interesting because when you talk about touchy-feely, for that matter, it's like, you know, I keep wondering, like, how can I build a culture that actually values people deeply without lowering the standards that performance requires?
Harsh, I would love to give you some a quick one on that one. Here's what I learned over the course of the last 34 years of my corporate servitude. Harsh, celebrate the small wins. We are quick to shoot people down, but also elevate people when even the simplest thing that goes right. So in sales, as an example, people say, did you win the deal? No. And they walk away. I actually say, you didn't win the deal. I get that. But what's the top three things you learned from it? And he says, you know what? The kickoff meeting was amazing, or the discovery conversation was amazing. So I tell him, what was so good about the discovery that you had with them? And he tells me, at the third question, you could see that he trusted me. Okay. In the next meeting, I actually say, hey, I'd like Harsh to actually share with us how the discovery process went. Even though we lost the deal, I think there's a great learning in what Harsh shared with me. Can you imagine what Harsh feels at that point? Harsh feels like leaning in. He said, you know what? I feel hurt, even though I'm feeling sick to the stomach. I lost a deal and I'm sitting with my peers. How am I going to explain that? This man is actually giving me an opportunity to redeem myself. Subtle things like that.
Deepak, you're talking about something that's deep in my heart, which is empathy. And how do like strong leaders separate empathy from maybe lowering expectations?
Is that another one of your loaded questions, sir, for me to answer? Oh my gosh. Here's the fun part with empathy, right? And I want to make sure that people on the call understand. Sympathy is easy to get by. Empathy is different. Empathy implies that you've stood in someone's shoes. And if you're truly empathetic, and you've stood in someone's shoes, then I just ask people to go back to when you stood in those shoes. Tell me what you felt. You know, what is someone? Looking someone in the eye and telling them that they don't have a place in your organization, your company anymore. That's not what he hears. What he hears is that you are telling him that you are not good for anything. Now, just put yourself in those same shoes and try to imagine if that were happening to you. What would you say? What would you want someone to say to you? And that is the difference between empathy and sympathy. That's the only thing I would say. I think I kind of gave you an answer which is slightly odds to what you're looking for, but I hope this helps.
100% it helps. And actually, it's actually such an important point, because I think that discipline is not the enemy of a healthy culture. Often it's actually the thing protecting it. When expectations are unclear, accountability becomes a little bit uneven, and it starts to absorb some of the costs, right? And that should never have been carried. In the final segment, I want to look at the upside of all of this. What happens when leaders actually truly develop as part of the growth strategy?
We'll be right back with more financial insights, strategy, and tools to help build a more profitable business. This is Money Gurus on Now Media Television. And we're back with more financial insights, strategy, and tools to help build a more profitable business. This is Money Gurus on Now Media Television.
Welcome back to Money Gurus. Stay connected to this show and now and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand. Anytime you like, download the free Now Media TV app on Roku, iOS, and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, catch the podcast version on www.nowmediatv. If I want to start a business that grows with strength, consistency, and resilience, I cannot only invest in systems and strategy. I also have to invest in people who can carry the business forward. I'll close by widening the lens. The segment should leave the audience with clear insight. Developing people is not separate from business growth. It is one of the smarter ways to strengthen execution, retention, adaptability, and long-term performance. Deepak, why do you believe human potential is one of the most underused growth levers in business?
I think, to be honest, Harsh, the reality is that companies are so used to doing procurement tenders on CRM, CPQ, complex systems, that are spending millions on those systems, right? They sometimes forget that there are people who run those systems, the people that sit behind those systems, updating them for them. And I think this is the reality. Systems can be measured. System uptime, downtime can be measured. Systems reliability can be measured. The amount of business that flows through a system can be measured. You can with pride say, this system hosts $8.8 billion of revenue. Now let's go to the human being behind it, right? People that are behind this, and why I talk about human potential is because people make better decisions than computers, whether you like it or not. And AI is there, but there's also reality, right? At the moment of judgment, at least in sales, salespeople will always matter in that moment. AI will support them, but then they have to make better decisions at the point of judgment. And I think that's very important. When we look at human systems and we need to invest in it, humans take more ownership than AI. And I know it sounds really funny. AI will spit out an answer, but humans take better decisions. So systems have to be balanced by humans. And human potential is very, very important, because at the end of the day, when it comes to succession planning or when it comes to growth strategies, how exactly are you going to execute that if your systems are alert, but your humanity or the focus on humans is not? And human growth is not just about growing an individual. It's about growing individuals to be the next generation that runs your organization. And that is exactly why you need to invest in humans.
I like that. And, you know, it's interesting you talked about AI. And, you know, for me, you know, I always keep getting the question, right, is AI going to take over my job? And I think more than anything, I think it's going to be somebody who knows AI is going to better than me is going to take over my job. It's not really the AI itself.
Spot on. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, this is one of those funny conversations. I want to be very cautious. Right? I fully support what you said, but Harsh, this argument is the same one that says guns don't kill people, correct? Correct? So let's just step back for a second over here. Here's how I would like to address this. AI is pervasive, whether you like it or not. Right? Everyone's going to use AI. All I'm going to ask people to do is that if you want to preserve your job, then yes, we are both aligned on one thing. Your job is not going to be taken by AI. Your job is going to be taken by that colleague of yours. And here's the sad news. The colleague will never even knew that he took your job because he thought he was doing what was right for him. And I think that's the difference this time, right? You see that, Harsh, what just happened there? AI was used for that individual's greatness, but it turned out to be that cleaver that chopped his colleague's neck off and no one even knew about it. And that's one of the problems with AI. AI is going to allow us to torn asunder the basic human socioeconomic contract and no one is going to feel bad about it because as long as they survived. So this is what the question is. I also don't want people to look over their back at their colleague and wonder because it's metaphors also, right? When Harsh, you and I make that statement, we're actually not telling people to become combative or suspicious of the colleagues. That's not the point. The point is staying up to date with AI in such a way that AI enforces upon you an understanding of how to skill yourself better, how to automate low-hanging fruit and tasks, because if you don't, someone else is going to automate theirs, and making yourself freely available to do the task for what you really can distinguish yourself on. And that is, again, as I say in sales, point of judgment, customer communications. Business to business actually stands for belly to belly in enterprise sales. And that belly-to-belly moment, no AI is going to take it unless you end up with a procurement bot talking to a seller bot. And that day is coming, boss. That day is coming.
That's funny. And, you know, Deepak, like, you know, like, how does, like, developing people improve performance beyond just, like, morale or engagement?
This is the, you know, we've been talking about human capital for so long. And you, and Harsh, if I'm correct, you're a CPA. So I would like to ask a question. Where in your balance sheet do you put down human capital?
That's the hard part now. You know, Deepak, we were talking about like measurement, right? When you talk about measurement, you know, how do you measure something like this? I'm all about the numbers.
Here's what I would say to you. There are two ways to measure this. And one perspective is the company's perspective on what it does with humanity. The first thing that I typically tell people to do is just tell me first what your recruitment cost to hire someone, number one. Number two, then, is I say to them, okay, what's the salary you pay this person? Now give me an estimate or some rule of thumb as to how much time do you think he spends in rework because of bad instructions or just because of incompetence. And people typically look at me funnily, but then they tell me, I think 20% of his time is wasted like that. Okay, let's take 20% of his salary, add that into it. Then you go through that rhythm. Now you say to him, what do you think are the downstream costs of that failure mistake that he made? And they explain that to me. Then I say, okay, now let's put the lens on leadership. How does leadership operate? Where do you feel leadership's guidance has failed? Give me a situation or circumstance. They talk about it. Then I tell them, so what proportion of time was lost? They tell me this much. I'm like, okay, multiply by how many people in the team? 8. Cool. Now you ask, someone's a very bad team player and he's not impacting and he's muddying the waters and bringing everyone's morale down. What is morale? Morale at the end of the day is ability of keep company to keep people and retain them. If 8 people in an organization are there, let's say we have a team of 10, and your engagement is falling, I can tell you right now, 30% are contemplating leaving and 10% will leave within 1 year, 6 months even. Put that factor in and now ask yourself a question. When I bring in a replacement, that replacement is going to come at a 30% higher salary, right? There's a trick, Harsh, you know that we always underpay the people that we have and tell them we cherish you, but only when they leave, do we realize how expensive they were when you bring the replacement in. You start adding up all of this stuff that I threw at you. And I can tell you right now, Harsh, you're going to fall out of your chair. The bad news is that none of this stuff is ever put onto a human capital P&L analysis because it's difficult to do in the way that we can analyze. But here's one thing I've learned in the course of, you know, my 34 years. People ask me, what's your mom's value to you, Deepak? And I say, she's priceless. Then someone says to me, I'd like you to take out an insurance policy on your mom and I'll pay for her. How much value do you put on your mom now? Do you see what I just did to you, Harsh? Everyone that insures their parents has a value. So stop giving me this nonsense that nothing is quantifiable. Yes, you're right. It's not gap quantifiable, Deepak. Come on, don't do that now. Socks, it's not going to like what you're doing with the whole mess here. It'll be an audit failure. I'm not asking this to go into the P&L. What I'm asking for this to happen is I want leadership to actually understand the economic consequence of bad decision making. And Harsh, if you don't mind, I want to flip this coin for 1 second. I want to show you the economics of bad decision making on the part of an individual, because as you can see, I've written a couple of books, right? And one of the books I wrote was Rise Up. And actually, I wrote that because it was a response to the economic misery that people inflict upon themselves by not managing themselves and not being self-aware. Now, this is what I call a flipping of fortune. We were having a conversation on the economics of leadership and companies not valuing human capital. And here's the economics decisions taken by an individual working in an organization. If he has a toxic boss and he cannot tolerate a toxic boss, they go and look for a job outside. When you are on the back foot looking for a job outside, that's typically where, Harsh, you will agree, people will take 10, 20, 30% less pay and just exit because they're tired of that boss. Instead of helping this person manage that individual or understand how to manage a toxic boss, we create a situation where if you're at $100,000 pay, you leave a job, it takes you 3 to 4 years to recover your old salary. You've lost $30,000 right there. And Harsh, $30,000 over 30 years, if you're in early career, is literally 150, 200K that you left behind. That's like a one bedroom apartment somewhere in Iowa, in the rural, and maybe a small apartment somewhere in India. So I always tell people, quantify everything in your life and you'll now suddenly realize that maybe learning how to manage a toxic boss is actually, it's a smarter economic choice than just leaving my job. Now, I'm not downplaying the misery that goes in here. I will not do that ever. But the mindset has to change. Sorry, Harsh, long answer, back to you, sir.
I actually love the answer. And I'm wondering, you know, in the model, Deepak, is there any place where you can actually measure the effects of a bad boss, you know, bad manager? I mean, in that whole puzzle, when we're evaluating employees, part of it has to do with management, right? Poor management in some cases.
You know, Harsh, I love this question. I'm actually digging this. I think you and I should have more podcasts because that's a million-dollar question, no pun intended. But Harsh, think about it this way. 3% of workforce today is on medication or seeking active therapy outside. Then you're sitting there thinking, well, did you just say 3%, Deepak? Yes. 17% of the workforce is actually in a state of mind where they actually cannot function properly. When you start adding up the cost to all of that stuff, you will actually be very surprised to learn, Harsh, that the cost of toxic managers is a couple of billion dollars just in the state of Texas. And I'm not even talking about the US or the global world. In fact, the WHO did an analysis and they actually said that 58% of people working in the corporate workforce above the age of 21 are affected by something that's going on, and that impacts their mental health. The cost was estimated to be more than $1 trillion because someone actually sat down and made a very complex mathematical model to explain that. And it blew my mind. In fact, me and my son, for one of his high school projects, we actually built out a model on what we call the impact of specific childhood diseases. And if that person is not going to earn in the future, what that impact to the economy was. And I was surprised. There's a massive... Sorry, I'm just going to come back to you because I think that you can see I get passionate about this topic.
I just really love what you have to say. I mean, you've really thought through this and I really appreciate it. And, you know, Deepak, I want to get back to the fact that you are one of those prolific authors. As a matter of fact, you know, you wrote, you know, the Rise Up series. You also wrote, you're an author on Leadership DNA. And I had the ability to just read one of your more recent books. It's What Makes Us Humans Fail Us Too. And I like the part about where you compared price of ambition with how it can lead to a burnout. I mean, it's really two sides of the coin, as you were mentioning before. I'm just curious if you could maybe tell us a little bit more about what inspired you to write that part of the book.
That book is very personal to me. It's a very close family member that went through complete mental health situation at work. I flew in to personally take this person back under my care because I could see what was happening to them. That led to this book, What Makes Us Human Fails Us Too. And for me, I took that and I'm building a business out of it, Rise Up. We're actually raising funds on WeFunder. You can find us at wefunder.com/riseupatwork. It's a big, big focus of mine, Harsh, to do something for the 21 to 28 year olds and help them navigate the dangerous world of the corporate environment. For first job, you're excited. How can I help you navigate? That is my focus now.
Wonderful, Deepak. If you could repeat that website one more time for the audience.
WeFunder.com, which is our crowdfunding platform. WeFunder.com/riseupatwork. One word, rise up at work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. That is a takeaway. I mean, I really want to leave the business, leave you with the fact that business scale through strategy, but they endure through people. When leadership, discipline, and development start working together, performance becomes more sustainable, more profitable, and more human at the same time. Dr. Deepak Bhutra, thank you for the conversation and for bringing this global perspective and practical insight to Money Gurus. I will look forward to seeing you next time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Harsh.
Thank you, Deepak. Amazing, man. Amazing stuff. I do want to talk to you offline sometime, though.
Thanks for watching Money Gurus. And I'm Matt Jadhav, host of Money Gurus on Now Media Television.